Good evening, everyone. Thank you for coming, joining. So Guillaume has sent us a message. Okay, great. Well, we're happy to have you here, Guillaume. I hope you can hear us. I've been thinking since our retreat during the weekend, let's see, how does this go? We were all, I include myself in it, but you know, a number of people, everyone came to see me and we talked in Dokusan and whatever. And we had a circle and Dharma talks. And it's, you know, it seemed like there was something that was kept coming up all the time was, you know, we are lay people and we have our lives full of all kinds of things, whether it's difficult professional difficulties, psychological anxiety or fear or doubt or uncertainty. What should I do? Where is this, you know, I can't maintain a meditation practice, or I don't know if I'm in the right job. All kinds of these worldly things that we all are dealing with. Or it could be insomnia or Sophia, the last day or the day, the last full day, tripped and twisted her ankle and had to go to the hospital and had a stress fracture and crutches and, you know, and then her car broke down. All this stuff that just comes up, right? That is just very present in our lives. And of course, if we were monastics, we could easily trip and have to go to the hospital and have a stress fracture too. That's not because we're lay people that happens. But the circumstances of being lay people are very different than the circumstances of monastics. And the center where we go in Quimbra is a lay secular Catholic place, founded by a woman who is a lay person, and the two women who live in the center are lay people. One of them is elderly and actually was in the hospital. The other one has a job and goes to work every day, comes home, and they have this center where there are people who come and do practices, Christian practices and classes, and they have a missionary work, whatever. But they are lay people as well. So we were fully in the lay world. And this Quimbra Center also is in the middle of several ribbons of highways. And across one of the highways is this enormous shopping mall with, you know, a big red sign, Continent, which is like, you know, Auchan or Intermarché or something. And, you know, there's Fnac and Pizza Hut and all the, it's a shopping mall, right? And it's right, we can see it clearly from where we are practicing. And there's these highways on all around. So we're like in the middle of the worldly world, the lay world. And for me, what was very present was how beautiful that is. And because we are wildflowers, that's also what we do. We spring up wherever we are. At the same time, how difficult it is. This is a challenge for us. And we have this great archetype in our tradition of a famous layman, Layman Peng, who was a wealthy merchant, kind of like Vimalakirti was in India, many, many centuries before. And he was a wealthy merchant in the 8th century in China, which is we call the golden age of Chan or Zen. And he had a family. He had two children, a son and a daughter, and a wife. And yet he was deeply attracted to Zen practice, and which was Chan practice at the time, because we're in China. So, and he would travel around and meet famous teachers, some of the best teachers of his time. And many people traveled around to different monasteries, especially monks who would go on pilgrimages and visit different teachers. And he did this too. So he came to his question, and it's been translated in two different ways that I know of. He came to, first of all, the teacher Sekito, I forget what his second name is, but he's in our lineage as well. When we chant the lineage chart, we chant him. And he came to him, and he's with a question. And his question, this is the two ways that the question is translated. One way is, and this is kind of the more obscure, more difficult to understand way, what about someone who has no connection with the 10,000 dharmas? So he asks Sekito this. That's one translation. The other translation is, where can I find a man or someone who is not entangled by the 10,000 things in the world? Which is more clear, actually, for us. The other one, I don't know why they translated it that way, but it's the same thing, but it just sounds differently. What about someone who has no connection with the 10,000 dharmas? It's pretty much, you know, where can I find someone who's not entangled by the 10,000 things, right? But actually what he's asking, you know, as we know with these Zen stories, is he's really asking, how can I disentangle myself from all the 10,000 things of the world? Being a father, husband, wealthy merchant. It's not just some theoretical question, you know? It's like, how can I be someone who's not entangled with it? Because presumably the stories were that monks were not entangled by the 10,000 things. And yet here he is, a father, a husband, a businessman. How can he not be tangled by the 10,000 things? And so I felt like during our retreat, we were all sitting there, and you know, this is the beauty and the mystery of our practice, that we are at once entirely free of those 10,000 things, and yet we're totally involved with them, totally caught up with them while we're sitting there, because we're thinking about it and wondering what to do, and then we have conflicts with people, and then there's, you know, discussions about how things should be done, and the cook has to think about what to cook and how it's going to be organized and who's going to do what, and the servers have to organize it and which way are you supposed to go, and the timekeeper. So during our retreat, there were people who were being trained to do the new positions, so first of all, the person who was the timekeeper hadn't done it for like 10 years, and so had to have a crash course. And then had to teach someone else to do it who had never done it. And the server, the head server, Anna was the head server. She's familiar with it, but she hasn't done it for a while. And she had to train someone else. Even if we know how to do all of these positions, it's still new. it's a different place, different time, different people, different arrangements. The teacher changes her mind and decides that we should all turn around and face the wall. So that's new, and everyone has to decide what to do and how to work it out. So we're all entangled with the 10,000 things. So Layman Pang comes and asks this to, first he comes to Seikito, and Seikito puts his hand over Layman Pang's mouth. He asks him, so he asks Seikito, you know, where can I find a man who's not entangled by the 10,000 things? And Seikito puts his hand over Layman Pang's mouth. In the story, Layman Pang has a great realization with this. Before we go into what the interpretation of that is, let's look at then the next time. He goes also to Basso, who was another great master, asks the same question. And Basso says, you know, so he says, where can I find someone who is not entangled with the 10,000 things in the world? And Basso says to him, I'll tell you when you swallow the West River in one gulp. Now, this too can, you know, these are always kind of obscure things. And maybe we could say in Basso's response, or maybe both of them, we could say both of them are implying, don't try to disentangle yourself. Having problems is not a problem. Having doubts is not a problem. Wondering if you should, you know, if you should make pasta or rice is not a problem. Wondering if you should change apartments or cities or something is not a problem. It's a problem, but having that problem is not a problem. I mean, a problem in some, you're trying to solve something. And that's not a problem, having that problem. I know this sounds really Zen jargon, but it's just life as it is. So it's just this. So could we see that, you know, maybe the two teachers, so Seikido is saying, you know, don't even mention it, you know. As soon as you start imagining that there is someone entangled or someone unentangled, well, you have, then you're stuck, right? So, you know, Seikido is really going directly, don't even say a word. That's how you become disentangled. Basho is interesting because he's saying, you know, become one with the world. Swallow the river. Swallow it up. Swallow the world. Eliminate the separations between you and the world, between you and the 10,000 things. So now we have someone on the screen whose Dharma name I gave him is the 10,000 things. So every time he comes to Dokusan, he has to say, I am the 10,000 things. That's a tall order. Can we not be separate from the 10,000 things? So, you know, when someone comes to me and says, yeah, I don't know why I'm here. I don't know what my practice is. I can't sit for more than 5 minutes, or I'm unable to have a daily practice, or I can't sit by myself. And I live far away from a group, and I don't like screen, so I don't sit because I don't want to. And I can't sit by myself, so I don't sit. So when I, you know, this kind of stuff comes all the time, right? And I'm thinking, well, so let's move on. Before I move on with that, what I'm thinking. So Layman Peng has this great realization. And he, and for him, that means swallowing in one gulp, being a father, a husband, and a merchant, a layperson, swallowing it in one gulp, being it entirely. And his whole family swallows it in one gulp, and they become famous for a family practice. And there is another story where it's not clear exactly if it was an accident or if it was intentional, but all of the Peng family's belongings were on a boat, like a ferry, and going across the river or down the river or something. And the boat sank. And they lost everything. So some versions of the story say Peng did it on purpose. After his realization, he's sunk everything to the bottom of the river. Others say it was just a complete accident. Because they decided that they would go on the road and go from monastery to monastery as a family. And so they were traveling on a boat on a river or something, and the boat sank. Whatever it is, they then became basket weavers. They had to support themselves. So, and they could weave, make baskets and sell them anywhere, right? So they had to continue with their livelihood, like we all do, right? All of us on the screen have to find some kind of livelihood, some way to support ourselves, because none of us are monastics. We're all lay people. Now he's famous for layman Peng after this, after all of this. And so this one is kind of a little more odd, but what's interesting is the poem that he says after. So he goes, one day he's with Seikito. One day Seikito comes to visit him and says, "I've come to visit you. What have you been doing?" And Layman Peng said, "If you're asking what I do every day, there's nothing to say about it." And Seikito says, "What did you think you were doing before you? I ask you about it." Because he said, "If you're asking me what I do, there's nothing to say. So what did you think you were doing before?" And Layman Peng then made up this poem on the spot. "What I do every day is nothing special. I simply stumble around. What I do is not thought out. Where I go is unplanned. No matter who tries to leave their mark, the hills and dales, or valleys, are not impressed. Collecting firewood and carrying water are prayers that reach the gods." That line, sometimes, usually it's chopping wood, carrying water, has gone down into history as, you know, a classic Zen phrase, chopping wood, carrying water. However, it's often misinterpreted, you know? And so we can say, "Oh, well, you know, that sounds beautiful, chopping wood, carrying water. But I have to file for my taxes before May 1st or May 8th or whatever it is. I had to go to IKEA and buy curtains today. And I had to go to another big shop, BHV in Paris, and buy some other curtains. And I mean, you know, that doesn't sound like chopping wood, carrying water. Chopping wood, carrying water sounds really good and sweet and beautiful. Or, you know, I'm really, you know, someone could say, well, I'm super anxious and I have this problem with anxiety and doubt and I can't sleep and I have nightmares, or I have, you know, these beautiful dreams that I get really involved in and I wish they would never end, or, but then they do end. But chopping wood, carrying water, yeah, right, that sounds great, but that's not what my life is." And the thing we miss is that all that stuff I just said is chopping wood, carrying water. we think chopping wood, carrying water is some beautiful, you know, in French we say bisounours, you know, like some kind of like happy, pretty butterflies and having fun and ease and, you know, chopping wood and carrying water sounds great. Well, actually it's not. Or it might be, but the point is to swallow it in one gulp. That's when it becomes great, you know, not great in the sense of, this is my, you know, I'm super happy. I've never dreamed of anything better, but actually it is that, but it's not what you thought you were dreaming of. That's how you become disentangled from it, is when you become one with it, as we say. And so this thing about swallowing the river in one gulp is interesting. He's not saying be one with it like that, but when you do that, when you swallow the world, it's like I say, you know, if you really count your breath and become one with it, then there's no separation between you, breath, counting, the universe. The universe is breathing. It's all one. And when people tell me they're bored with counting their breath, or it doesn't work for them, or that it's a beginner's practice and it's, you know, it's terrible if I have to go back to the beginner's practice after all these years or something. I tell you, you know, I go back to it all the time. For a couple of minutes during a sitting period, I definitely go back to it. Because it's impossible to become bored with it if you are one with it. It's just, there's no one to be bored and nothing to be boring. And it's the thinking that is boring, or the thinking that it's elementary, or the thinking that it doesn't work, so I can't become disentangled because it doesn't work for me. That's what makes it not work, if we stay in these terms of working or not working. So I was, you know, thinking about Laman Pang. And there was a time when I used to talk about Laman Pang a lot. I have this book that, you know, unfortunately, someone gave it to me and they wrote to me in French. And I can't read the signature and they didn't put a date. So I'm really sorry to say I don't know who gave me this book. But I can tell you what they wrote. Amy Sensei, so this was, you know, like a while ago. So I am very happy to offer you this book, which aligns with the life that you have chosen, and which was déposé pour toi, was set before you or something. Is it anyone on the screen who gave me this book? The only two people, the French francophones. No, I didn't think so. It doesn't look like either one of your handwriting. And you know, it's true. This the teachings of Laman Pang do directly align with my life as it is, and that not necessarily. I did choose this way, this path of Zen. And made my life because it fit my life, because this, my life and it were one. So now the book is from 2009, the date of the publication. So I don't know who gave it to me. Maybe Freddie, actually. Maybe Freddie, I'm gonna have to ask him. So in any case, that's our way. No. Laman Pang's way is our way. So maybe I will stop because I'm kind of blabbering on. and see if you have anything to say. All of you are Layman Pangs too. We all are on this screen. If anyone wants to ask questions or comment, share something.
Yeah, it just reminds, hi everyone, good evening. It just reminds me that, I don't know, some time ago, I did a talk that was around untangling myself, and you did a talk just afterwards that was about how being entangled. it was very funny. It was like the other side of the coin, another way to see it. But because I do feel that we also, with a practice, we're really trying to unentangle ourselves from our reactivity. So there is work being done about unentangling, but it's true that we remain entangled.
Well, and maybe you know, maybe this, it's not contradictory at all, and I think you are saying that that the entangling, when we are one with whatever it is, then, and that's what the work is we're doing, obviously, yeah, then we're neither entangled or disentangled. No, that's, we're one with whatever it is. So, yeah. Was that last week that you gave that talk?
I don't know, a year ago, two years ago.
Yeah, I thought I remembered that. Yeah,
a long time ago. Yeah. Because I like that word, to be, and it's very, it's for me, it brings a lot of very clear images of being untangled. It's very visual for me, very graphic.
Yeah. But and when we, in the other translation where it's, what about someone who has no connection with the 10,000 dharmas? That, you know, there is, if you don't have a connection with the 10,000 dharmas, well, then you're in trouble. You know, that's like what you're saying, is that you have to have a connection. You know, that's what we're trying to do, is to be connected.
Yeah, and if Lei Pang would have found a teacher, well, I mean, someone who was totally unentangled, how could he actually, that teacher could actually relate to what he was actually living?
Yeah.
And that's...
I think we would say he wouldn't be a teacher. That she.
Yeah, absolutely. He wouldn't be a teacher. Yeah.
Yeah. So that goes along the lines of having problems is not a problem. You know, it's actually, it's life as it is. So, Sophia, before you came on, I mentioned the fact that you had fallen and tripped and hurt your foot as some of the problems that we encountered during the retreat. So I hope you're okay. I mean, is it okay? Is it better or not?
Hi, yes, it's getting better. I have less pain now. So thank you, yeah. And again, I do relate a lot to what you are saying, because if I can just be here resting my foot, it's fine. Then if I start thinking about, oh my God, what a big problem I have here, why did this happen? Then again, I'm entangled. So. Yeah, but I think I'm working on it.
Well, and you also had an extra entanglement by the fact that your car broke down, and then the car that was lent to you broke down.
Exactly. And then I had a third one too in the middle of the night with the sleep. And so, yeah, there were a lot of things probably for a reason. I don't know. But then everything got sorted out too very easily. Well, except from the foot, obviously. That will take longer. But the rest also, yeah.
Great. Christine.
Is that Layman Peng also with his family, the story where I think he stumbles and falls down, and then his daughter says, "Oh, you stumbled, do you need help?" And she lays next to him.
Yeah.
Is that same family?
Yeah. Same family. Yeah. Crazy family. Yeah, they all were amazing. The one we don't hear so much about is the son, but there are stories. In fact, in the Hidden Lamp book, was asked to contribute a thing to, the story they gave me to comment on Koan was to do with Layman Peng's wife. Because there's a number of stories about her too.
Yeah,
No, go ahead.
What you talked about is, yeah, it really sounds easy or logical when you listen to but being face to face with the own chopping wood and carrying water, it just feels a little different.
It's true. It does. It sounds, makes sense. But of course, the challenge is always to realize it in our own experience. And I forgot to add that after the case where the story where he recites the poem about chopping wood and carrying water, Sikito approves of his poem and then says, "So, are you going to wear black or white?" And Layman Peng said, "I will do whatever is best." It came to pass that he never shaved his head to join the Sangha. So, and the note is that black robes were worn by monks and white robes were worn by lay people. And so Sikito asks him, "Are you going to wear black or white?" Meaning, oh, so now that you've realized this and you see it so clearly, are you going to put on a black robe and become a monk? Basically saying that. And Layman Peng says, "I'll do whatever is best. Whatever is appropriate for the situation." And this last line is, it comes to pass that he never put on a black robe and shaved his head and became a monk. Because that was not what was best. That was not his way, But it's a moment to moment. He didn't say, "I will never do that." He said, "I will do whatever is best." And it's a moment to moment path. So it sounds difficult. And yet it's really moment to moment. We know there's also a story of the family, and I can't remember exactly what it is, but it's something like there's a monk who comes and asks if practice is easy or difficult or something. And Layman Peng says it's difficult. And so that's where, like you're saying, Christine, it's difficult. And the monk goes to his wife and says, is this path difficult or easy? And she said, it's easy. Just one step after another. Just do what's here. So then he's confused, the monk, because, you know, guys, Layman Pang says it's hard. She says it's easy. So he starts to leave and he comes across the sun. He asks the sun, and the sun says, it's both difficult and easy. If you say it's difficult, then it's difficult. If you say it's easy, then it's easy. So now he's really confused, the monk, and leaves. And on his way, he encounters the daughter, who says, you know, I wish I could, the daughter said, maybe I can find it here somewhere. Something like, so she says, and this isn't exactly the same story, but this is the same phrase. It's neither hard nor easy. The mind of the patriarchs is in every blade of grass. So, meaning, you know, that you know, I guess we could come back to the perfect way. It just dislikes picking and choosing. Every blade of grass is the Dharma, you know, is the way. So it's neither difficult or easy. And yet it is difficult and it is easy. That's our challenge. Yeah. And maybe in a monastery, maybe not. I guess we think that in a monastery it would be easy. Because we would have fewer things. Because as we know, in a retreat, like some of us have just done, and others like a few weeks ago, the challenges are very different in a retreat setting. I mean, I came home and I said to my husband, you know, it's great. It's like, I don't have to cook. I don't have to think about what we're going to eat. You know, I can sit all day, and then during the break, I can rest. I can do Qigong, you know, and then I go to bed. I turn off the light. By 11, I'm in bed asleep. You know, I'm never in bed asleep at home at 11. People are, you know, really, we're all open-hearted and we're all sharing this practice together. It's like, great, it's ideal. I'm sure if I did that all the time, though, and I know, having lived in a community, that it's not always like that. People don't clean the toilet when they're supposed to, or they, you know, somebody forgets to buy the toilet paper, or somebody's making noise and you can't sleep, or whatever. Debbie.
Yeah, that was one of the things, nice to see you all. Nice to see you, Sophia. One of the things that came up when we were reading The Great Path of Awakening, this was in a monastic environment, and there were these little slogans like, don't covet your brother monks, Sabutan or Zafuans, as if, well, I'm sure then, as a lifelong, well, you're married to 20 people that you see every day, you can get pretty. Oh, and also Joanne remembers maybe better than me, but don't wish your fellow monk dead so you can inherit his stuff. I mean, there were these little that seemed to indicate that it's not all that easy to be in the monastic life either. I mean, human beings is human beings, whether they're monastics or not.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and, you know, so, yeah, in our, you know, pseudo-monastic life in a retreat, there are things that, it always amazes me how when we say, who wants to work in the kitchen? It's like everybody raises their hand and they want to work in the kitchen. If we were to start out with who wants to clean the toilets, who wants to change the garbage or something? Nobody would want to do it. Another one is, who wants to do the lunch dishes? It's usually the beginners who get sign, who raised their hand for that one. I know that when I first came to retreat, I always ended up on the lunch dishes until I quickly figured out that that was, you know, not so great because it cut into my rest period and there were usually a lot of dishes. And so even that, you know, like you said, Debbie, it's like, well, we can find something to covet, even if it's just like what we're going to do for 45 minutes during the work period. Or choosing which Oreoke bowls we're going to use. And I'm speaking for myself because I forgot my Oreoke set in Paris. So I had to go there and look at the Oreoke bowls. And I found myself thinking, do I want the blue ones or I don't want the white ones? And someone, maybe it was Anna or someone said, you know, small bowls are really small. So I thought, okay, well, I'll take two of the big ones and one of the middle ones. You know, it's like you find this stuff to focus on.
I got hooked on, what are they called? The swiper, spatule. I have a whole, I could write a book on spatula because the ones at Joa's retreat didn't work. And I was at Donna on Monday and they work. So I had this whole theory about spatula. I can spend a whole meditation period going on about which ones work and why they do and don't. I know it's amazing.
And yeah, so can we, I mean, spatulas, that's a big question. Huh? There's, you know, the eternal search for the perfect spatula. I know all of the sanghas are searching for them. But can we just look at all of this? You know, we're laughing. It's great that we're laughing about it, you know, because can we see this is chopping wood, carrying water, this stuff, you know? That's it right there. I mean, the spatula thing, you know, it's to the point where the good ones at Dana, or I don't know if they still have them, they're from Dr. Dechter, which is a German outfit. And so Corinne, when she started her Sangha, ordered them from Dr. Dechter. But they changed the handle, and so there's a hole on the tip of it. So she had one of her, this is very Corinne, she had one of her students fill in all the holes with like some kind of wood thing. You could, Tiago probably knows what this is, you know, you could like some kind of pseudo wood or something that you fill it in the holes with and then sand them over so you couldn't really tell, you know. So she's got these great spatulas that work really well and they don't have a hole at the end. So it's great. And we have a wildflower. Of course, we have this wildflower array of spatulas because we keep trying, and some of them work and some of them don't. I still have my old one from Donna that is like almost 30 years old, so from Dr. Dechter. Crazy, huh? Chopping wood, carrying water.
In my first retreat, I clearly had one that didn't work. And then there was tomato, something with tomato soup or something. And I had a white blanket, or the serviette was white. And it was just a catastrophe after. And so I said, well, the next time I'll have a look for in serviette that is not white. So if there are colored ones, I take colored ones. And I realized that somebody did the whole round with the water in it, so that if you couldn't put away everything with the spatula, that you just rinse it with the water. And all those little tricks to end up with something that still looks quite clean in the end of the retreat.
Right. And then the, you know, the karmic consequences of that are the person who washes those, and Anna can be a witness to this, has, you know, these cloths that have like curry stain and tomato stain and all kinds of stuff on it. Chopping wood, carrying water, you know.
Well, Good evening, everyone. To add to the array of examples, I once spoke with a, she's a Portuguese nun in the Tibetan tradition who did the traditional 3 year, 3 months, something like that, Tibetan retreat in France. And so in this, you know, supposedly disentangled environment, so they couldn't go out, and so at some point she needed to get underwear. She needed to get new underwear. And so because they couldn't get out, they could only do it via with a catalog. It was one, I forget the brand now, but it was a very famous brand even here in Portugal, where you could get it with a catalog. And so it was a hellish couple of months deciding on which underwear to get. So yeah. La Redoute, yes, exactly. That's the one. Exactly. Thank you. Yeah. So she says it was hell. It was absolute hell to decide which, because there's pages and pages of the stuff. You know, colors and everything, all the characteristics, all the features. So, yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. So can we swallow it all in one gulp? You know, be one with the 10,000 dharmas. Eliminate the separations, right? You know, it's like I always quote Genpo saying, if you don't want to enter this, if you don't want to leave the Zendo, then don't enter it. Which is kind of the equivalent of Sikido putting his hand over Lame Peng's mouth, or Basso saying, you know, when you swallow the river in one gulp, I'll tell you. But then he doesn't need to know anymore because he's already done it. He is it. And it makes all of these challenges and all of these tasks much easier, actually, when we are one with it.
And Roshi, isn't that when you were talking about saying I am the 10,000 things, it's in the, now we're talking about, can we not have that separation? I what came to me was it's exactly the same, it's just different words. If you have to say I am perfect way or I am awakened heart, it's exactly the same. You're saying exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
I am it.
Right. Exactly. And that's why we receive these Dharma names, you know, to remind us of that. They're our koans, our life koans, and our, like I said during the retreat, I forget how that came up, but something to that effect. They're always reminders, they're always pointers at oneness, at the absolute reality. Of who you truly are. Yeah, something like that.
Hello, everybody. About the idea of swallowing, I don't think I've heard you, Hoshi, saying these words to mean no separation. Well, I have not the idea of that, the memory of that. But now that I've heard the word and with all these examples, I remember two situations where the idea of swallowing was present, and they are very different, and I want to share this with you. One is once I was drawing some very little flowers, and I really felt, and I said to myself that I had just swallowed these flowers, and that's why I could represent them so clearly. I had this feeling, so I said to myself, well, I just swallowed these flowers, and they are back to this paper like they are, that like I am seeing them. And this was very strong. This was years ago, and I remember that. And another situation where I heard this swallowing idea was a friend of mine, a woman, one of her sons died. Well, that was a big tragedy. But she said to kind of facing that the life, her life had to go on. She had another son, she has things to do, she had, well, a life to live. She told me, I've swallowed my son. And she went on repeating this feeling. Well, my son is again inside me. I've swallowed him. Mm-hmm. So yeah. That's what I wanted to share with you.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. And I don't know for that woman, but it's maybe that meant that she was not suffering like she might have been. She wasn't grasping to bring him back, or I don't know, but and you're right, I don't think I've quoted this from the story from Layman Peng. I don't think I've talked about that, the swallowing. That's not how I would phrase it, actually. Although it absolutely, now that that's how Basso phrased it, I have no problem using those words, but I'm following along with his words. And it's true. It's not that it's not true what he's saying. Yeah. How do you say swallow in Portuguese?
Engolir. Engolir.
I am. Well, I think we are about out of time. So I guess we'll stop there. And thank you, everyone, for sharing and listening and being here.